Blog Talk Radio.
His name is Malik Zulu Shabazz. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
It is indeed my honor and great joy and privilege to be invited by Brother and Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz, who is one of the greatest student leaders of all time.
I'm talking about terrorism now. We want a war on terrorism. The war on terrorism should have started 400 years ago. Bring the flag, brother. Bring the flag.
Bring the flag.
The ring. Because I'm here to tell you that false patriotism will not get you out of this.
Right.
Holding a bandana flag around your head will not get you out of this. Huh? Flag on your antenna in your car will not get you out of this. You might be saying, God bless America.
Right.
But when did America ever bless God?
Right.
You might be saying, God bless America. But God might be damning America
right.
at this very hour.
What's all this shit I see on here about harassment and all that bullshit, rap for power? You son of a bitch, get a goddamn job and make a constructive citizen out of yourself and stop all this bullshit. You wouldn't have to have no fucking rally for power. You got that message, motherfucker?
We are Africans, and we happen to be in America. We're not Americans. We are people who formerly were Africans who were kidnapped and brought to America. Our forefathers weren't the pilgrims. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. The rock was landed on us. We were brought here against our will. We were not brought here to be made citizens. We were not brought here to enjoy the constitutional gifts that they speak so beautifully about today. Because we weren't brought here to be made citizens today, now that we've become awakened to some degree and we begin to ask for those things which they say are supposedly for Americans, they look upon us with hostility and unfriendliness. If you're interested in freedom, you need some judo, you need some karate, you need all the things that will help you fight for freedom. Nationalism is the wave of the present and the future. It is nationalism that's bringing freedom to oppressed people all over the world. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the Algerians. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the Nigerians and to the Ghanaians. It was nationalism that brought freedom to the people of Uganda and Tanganyika and Sudan and Somaliland. The Africans didn't get it by sitting in. They didn't get it by waiting in. They didn't get it by singing, "We Shall Overcome." They got it through nationalism. And you and I will get it through nationalism.
Black power, and more black power to my people. This is your brother, your soldier in arm and comrade in battle, Sean Kwali. Happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from the hills and the smells of North America. As always, I count this a privilege. I count this an honor. I count this a joy. I count this a mighty blessing to be able to talk to you, my family, from this platform that we call and consider Black Power Radio. And as always, I give thanks to the Almighty, true and living Black God, the God of our forefathers and foremothers, the God of our ancestors, knowing that we use many different names, different expressions, but I bear witness and we bear witness that there is but one God. That got to give thanks to those who have fought for us and those who have sacrificed for us and those who didn't take any prisoners and those who did what they had to do and did what they must do in in order to push our people forward and to break the shackles and the tackles that we've all faced and that they faced. All of our ancestors, long list of our people who were freedom fighters and warriors and strugglers and real black men and women. Not no sellouts, not no punks, not no sissified cowards, but some real black men and women who stood up strong, who stood up bold, and even at times had to take the low road just so the children could survive. Talking about our people. And so, my dear family, we got to send you, of course, the greetings of peace and blessings and prosperity from our national chairman, the warrior lawyer, five-star general, man who has been battle-tested and battle-trained and is still on the battlefield when others are punking out or asleep in your beds. Talking about our national chairman, doctor and attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. He sends you greetings of Assalamu Alaikum, Hotep, free the land, Shalom, Shalom, peace to the gods, peace to the earth, and a whole new Black Panther Party. We send you the greetings of Black Power. You don't got to know if the call is freedom or death. Listen, my family, welcome. We're back. We're black. To Black Power Radio. And here we are. We're pushing forward to June the 25th. June the 25th. Now, some of you all, you seen on my Facebook page, you saw how I put up a quote from the Honorable Comrade Huey P. Newton. And the Honorable Comrade Minister and Dr. Huey P. Newton told us and told you that revolution, which means complete constructive change happens in stages. It happens as a process. It's not an overnight thing. It's not a wave your magic wand and everything is okay thing. This thing happens in stages. And so we carry on. We gave you April the 23rd as a nation. That was a united effort, a united front. And April the 23rd was the spark. It was the spark that produced a movement, and that movement is called the National and International Day of Action. The Day of Action Movement. And for those of you who know better, you already know when we say a day, we're not talking about a 24-hour period. They got nothing to do with 24 hours when we say a day. We're talking about a day in the ancient sense, in the African sense, in the indigenous sense, where a day is a period of time. It can be generations of time, but we ain't got that much time. So we're talking about a protracted struggle that is designed to liberate our people and ultimately to enable us and provide us with a land of our own. We're sick of talking about it, sick of reading about it, sick of thinking about it and overanalyzing it. Black people must have a land of our own or we will suffer the consequences. We must have economics of our own, and we are right now suffering the consequences. We must have politics of our own and interest of our own, or we will suffer and are suffering the consequences. And so you heard Minister Malcolm X, Brother Omar Wali, El Haj Malik Shabazz, you heard him open up the show and tell you that black nationalism is the wave of the future. It's the wave of the past, and it's the wave of the future, he told us. And he said that other nations They did not get freedom. They did not get liberation. They did not get their wants granted by sitting in. They didn't get that by chanting. They didn't get that by having demonstrations around empty buildings. They got that by black nationalism. They got it by nationalism. And so it's fitting now, going towards June the 25th. And remember, we're talking about building a nation. It's fitting now that our people understand what black nationalism is and what it really means and how it really reflects us and represents us and what it means for us. Because you have to remember, there's a system in place. There's a white power structure in place that is designed to keep us away from our freedom. J. Edgar Hoover used it. Those who put us on the slave ships, they used it. But oh, no good J. Edgar Hoover, old cross-dressing Hoover said that his aim was to keep the youth, especially, to keep the youth away from black nationalism. He says, later he says, that if they were to join on to black nationalism, that they would ultimately, I'm paraphrasing, be able to produce a black messiah who would unite the hearts and the minds of the people as one nation, one united nation. And so what was it that former FBI director J. Edgar Hoover saw in black nationalism that he understood if it was applied to the black condition, if it was applied to the descendants of African slaves and our condition, that we could get up out of this thing overnight? So you got to understand what's happening with this Day of Action movement. It's bigger than one organization. It's bigger than someone saying, you know, we want change, we want this. We're talking about putting our feet to the ground. We're talking about putting our boots and our shoes and our sneakers to the pavement. We're talking about going into the trenches. We're talking about going into the different fields. We're talking about expanding the local organizations and committees into national and international ministries. See, you hear us say black power. You hear it said all the time, black power, but black power now has to become more than a slogan. It has to become more than a chant and a battle cry. And it has to become something now that we internalize and that we act out in our everyday lives. It has to become now the modus operandi. It has to be what we do. And so let me first read this to you. This is just a definition. You know, this is, you know, we speak in this English language. You know, this doesn't do justice. But let me just give you this definition on what they say. Now, according to an encyclopedia, okay, they give it this twist. They say that black nationalism advocates a racial definition, or in parentheses, redefinition of indigenous national identity as opposed to multiculturalism. Say there are different indigenous nationalist philosophies, but the principles of all African nationalist ideologies are unity and self-determination or independence from European society. Says Martin Delaney is considered to be the grandfather of African nationalism, inspired by the apparent success of the Haitian Revolution. The origins of African indigenous nationalism and political thought, they say, lie in the 19th century with people like Marcus Garvey. Henry McNeil Turner, Martin Delaney, Henry Garnett, Edward Wilmot Blyden, Paul Kuffy, etc. It says the repatriation of African slaves to Liberia or Sierra Leone was a common African nationalist theme during the 19th century. They say Marcus Garvey's Universal Negro Improvement Association of the 1910s and 20s, they say, was the most powerful black nationalist movement, they say, to date, claiming 11 million members. They say, although the future of Africa is seen as being central to African nationalist ambitions, they say some adherents to black nationalism are intent on the eventual creation of a separate African nation in the U.S. or elsewhere. Okay? Just giving you all this. We got to know what it is. They say the first period was pre-classical African nationalism. Beginning from the time the Africans were brought ashore in the Americas up to the Revolutionary period. The second period began after the Revolutionary War, when a sizable number of Africans in the colonies, particularly in New England and Pennsylvania, were literate and had become disgusted with the social conditions that arose out of Enlightenment ideas. That's key. We find in such historical personalities as Prince Hall, Richard Allen, and Absalom Jones, a need to found certain organizations as the Free African Society, African Masonic Lodges, and church institutions. These institutions would serve as early foundations to developing independent and separate organizations. The third period of African nationalism arose during the post-Reconstruction era, especially among various African-American clergy circles. Separate circles had already been established. It had already been established and were accepted by African-Americans because of the overt oppression that had existed since the inception of the United States. Lastly, since this latter phenomenon led to the birth of modern African nationalism, which stressed the need to build separate communities that promote strong racial ties and which collect and have collective resources. This ideology has become the philosophy of groups like the Moore Science Temple, the Nation of Islam, and others. And although the 60s brought on a heightened period of religious, cultural, and political nationalism, African nationalism would later influence Afrocentricity. So with all of that now, what do you see? You see that from Bishop Henry McNeil Turner, from Martin Delaney, from Edward Blyden, from Marcus Mosiah Garvey, from Mr. Elijah Muhammad, and so many others, that all the way back to as far as the early 1900s, and really before then, our people had been talking and organizing on building a nation of our own. Now, what sparked it now? They say, according to the encyclopedia, what sparked it was the success that our people saw in Haiti. They say that the Haitian Revolution was the spark that caused our people here in the hills of North America to get up. Now, if you don't understand what happened in the Haitian Revolution, you got to know that the Haitian Revolution was a site of conflict. It was a site of conflict in a French colony of Saint Dominique. Okay? Study that. the French colony of Saint Dominique, and that they had founded the Haitian Republic. Okay? They threw off the shackles of slavery and ended up founding the Haitian Republic. Okay? And this I have to say, revolution, that's what it was. This overthrow, okay, that happened in 1791 was the only one that was successful in achieving independence with the new nation. And this is from the start of 1791. Okay? And you're talking about a colonized nation. Okay? Colonized under French colonial rule. Okay, that means that, if for those that don't understand what that means when you have one culture, you have a culture that dominates another already established society, similar to the same way that Christopher Columbus, just to make it plain, that Columbus did the indigenous people here on this shore, where they brought European ideas and British ideas to the shores and overtook the people's culture, overtook the people's names, overtook the people's land and their resource, and they used it for their own economy and their own nation. Any similarities is definitely on purpose. So in Haiti, they were under French colonial rule, and the French had a system or an order where the minority would rule over the poor. Think about it. The system where the minority rule over the illiterate poor, they would rule, meaning that the French would be in charge and they would rule over the poor using scare tactics. They would rule over the poor using fear and deception. They would rule over the poor using tactics that were designed to make you and make me bow and make the people of Haiti bow to French rule. Okay? And so in Haiti, the people who found themselves in this situation now, okay, now let me just also make this point before I go to that, that in that same situation in Haiti, that you had the white folk that were there, the French that were there, taking the Haitian women. They were taking the Haitian women away from the Haitian black man, okay, and producing many mulatto children. Okay? All right, that's another subject for another day. But in Haiti now, okay, with the social construct being that the French majority would rule over the minority with force and would not rule in a just way, the Haitian people, those who had heart, those who had will, those who had might, those who had strength, already knew that they had to organize. They knew that they had to organize. Okay? Now, the problem that Haiti had in the beginning, and really many of the Caribbean islands and the indigenous islands that they had, the problem there was that they had a dependency on white power or the European power. They had a dependency on European trade. Okay? And so they would do international trades between the two. And see, Haiti had, just like Africa and our other indigenous parts of the world, Haiti had resources that the Europeans did not have and could not have. Okay? Haiti was good for dealing with indigo and, you know what I mean, dealing with the coffee beans and cocoa and all kind of things that the European could not get access to. Okay? And so the Europeans needed the resource to keep the slave owners and the plantations up to par, okay? To keep them up to par in the north. This was a trade thing. They would trade. The plantation owners would trade in North America with European countries. See, I'm trying to show you all the system here, okay? And so this, we're talking now the 1700s. All right, so what I'm trying to show you is that what Haiti went through in the 1700s is the same scenario that the black man and black woman are involved in right now on the shores of North America, in the hells and smells of North America, okay? But now, the difference between the Haitian enslavement is that the Haitian would constantly fight back, many times violently. I can't even sugarcoat it. Many times just straight up bloody battles and conflicts. The Haitian slaves would fight back immediately with their captors and their oppressors. Okay? And even, you know, when they were captured, those who were captured would still be fighting, okay? Many of you all, you know these brothers and sisters as Maroons. They were called Maroons. The white man called them runaway slaves, but they were called Maroons, all right? And so I'm just going to move this on, but you get the history of our people, like Toussaint Louverture, and Boukman, okay, and so many others who would lead the revolutions, cannot forget Dessalines, and they would lead the movement against their enslavement, and ultimately their people, the people produced the revolution, which produced the leadership. Now, back to America. In America, our forefathers and foremothers were brought here for the express purpose of being slaves. Okay? No other purpose about it. It wasn't like they were trying to be friendly and be cool. No, we were here with the express purpose of being slaves. And so, inspired by what happened in Haiti, okay? And hopefully we'll get to talk about why Haiti is in the condition that it's in now. Inspired by the success of Haiti, you had people like Henry McNeil Turner and Martin Delaney and others who said, we can do the same thing. We can do the same thing because they already saw that we was in the same condition as our brothers and sisters. That's why when we say Pan-Africanism, that means that wherever a black life is found in any part of the world, that we are the same people. See, that's why Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz and the New Black Panther Party are trying to wean our people away from clinging to labels and sects and parties and whatnot and think nationhood. You got to think nationhood. All right, because Bishop Henry McNeil Turner and Martin Delaney and those who understood the effects of black nationalism already knew that even though we had identifying markers to identify organizations, you know, for example, you had the Universal Negro Improvement Association, you know, they had identifying markers, but they knew we were one people. Okay, and that's why you had people like Marcus Garvey saying it was Africa for Africans. That's a deep statement. Africa for Africans. All right? Now, looking at a man like Marcus Garvey, it's easy to say you know, that's my man. That's who I'm going to roll with. Okay? Looking at a man like Kwame Nkrumah, it's easy to say, you know, that's my man. That's who I'm going to roll with. Okay? Or any of them. But the point that they were trying to drive us to was to be one nation of people engaged in a struggle to build a nation of our own and to stop begging white folks for that which we can unite and do for ourselves. Okay? Now look at it. In order for Europe to survive, it had to rape and to pillage Africa. I want you all to think about that. In order for Europe, in order for Europe and the white nations to survive, they had to rape and to pillage Africa. In order for the white nations to survive, they had to get the knowledge and the wisdom from Africa. Everything that they wanted to do, every move they wanted to make, anything that they wanted to accomplish, they had to check with Africa. So what are they doing today? Right now, today, the American imperialist, the white power structure, and the British structure, Europe, they are all fighting for the domination of Africa. And right here in America, since we have been sold the dream, the American dream, we don't see our connection to Africa and our connection to the world. We don't see it as a people. We don't see the chains that link us together and the struggle and the common history that binds us together. And so while Africa is being subjugated to being bombed, and Africa is being subjugated to being robbed of its resources and its minerals and its waterways, we play in America. We frolic in America. We lollygag in America and dilly-dally in America and don't see how the robbing of Africa really means the robbing of you and I. Because in America, we have already lost everything. We've lost our names. We've lost our languages. We've lost our culture. We've lost our indigenous gods and all that. We've lost it. It's gone. And we're trying to resurrect it now. But Africa is the staple. It's the center. It is the heart of the world. See, if you got Africa, then you got something serious. If you've got Africa, see, they want you to believe that if you have Africa, you're dealing with some savages, or you're dealing with some, you know, uncivilized nations, or some places that nobody wants to be a part of. But Africa is a civilized country. Okay? Africa is the heartbeat of the world, where all the mathematics and all of that came from, that comes from Africa. Everything that they built their world on, that came from Africa. So they tell you so subtly, I mean, all you got to do is look on the back of the dollar bill. They tell you so subtly on the back of the dollar bill what they're trying to do, what they're looking at, what the aim is about, what the whole, you know, the whole battle is about. But the black man and black woman, we don't understand what the battle is about, and we don't understand what our purpose is in this thing. See, they tell you, divide and conquer, okay? Divide and conquer. If you don't believe that you are a part of the people of Africa, then it's easy for you and it's easy for me to simply stay divided and watch our homeland or our mother continent, as the Black Panther Party of the 1960s say, to watch our mother continent be destroyed because you have your hope in America. And you think that as long as America appears strong, that you don't have anything to worry about. But I've been telling you all, and the new Black Panther Party has been telling you all for months that the dollar has no value. It has no value. It is a worthless piece of paper that is produced by the Federal Reserve. And the Federal Reserve is not even a governmental institution in America. I hope that's hit right at home. The Federal Reserve is not a government institution. It is not an institution that is backed by the government. So since the dollar is falling, that means that America, for all intents and purposes, is broke and does not have anything to sustain itself. I'm going to get to all the calls here. And so looking at the vital signs and seeing things for the way that they are, that means that now we have to do for ourselves. We have the duty now to build for ourselves. We have the duty now to raise up a nation for ourselves and for our children, because America can't do it. And so it is June the 25th. This is about organizing to the point to where you're able to sustain yourself, because now we have the resources. You heard about Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma. We have it. We got it, but we got to pull together now. Let me go right to the phone line because it's blowing up. 202-674, you're on the air with Black Power Radio. We're talking about the dawn of black nationalism, a nation of our own. Black Power.
Black Power. Black Power.
Black Power. Talk to me. What do you think about this nation of our own?
Hassan Shabazz, New Black Panther Party, D.C. chapter.
Hassan, Black Power to you, sir. Talk to
I
want to
say Black
Power
to all
my beautiful
new. Can we
build this nation of our own, my brother?
Yeah,
Hassan,
brother.
Go ahead. Can we build
yeah.
a nation?
Black Power to all my beautiful Nubian brothers and sisters, kings and queens. Assalamu alaikum. Uhuru. Asante Sai. So I love y'all. It's good to talk to y'all after the success of the Day of Action, and it was great. April 23rd, the Day of Action was an absolute success. You can go on YouTube and see us, see DC, how we represented. And
yes, sir. I saw that.
We gotta keep that energy going, my beautiful black nation. We gotta keep that energy going. The brother made a lot of excellent points. We got to be keen. We got to get some gold diamonds, some gold and diamond mines or something. We got to sacrifice, y'all. We got to sacrifice. There's no avoiding it no more.
Right.
I'm gonna take half of what I got and just say, look, y'all. Everybody take half of what they get. We can get us some tractors. We can get us some machines. We can talk to some African leaders, heads of state. Look, man, what's up, man? Let's stop playing games now.
Exactly.
Where we come from. You know who Marcus Garvey was. We ain't reinventing the wheel here. Stop trying to reinvent the wheel. You know, let's get us, we got brilliant people with our organization. Let's get us an import-export license. Let's get to work, man. I don't care if it's even with a shovel. I think we can do better than that. I think we can do it with a boat, a ship, some tractors, some bulldozers, some cranes. I think we can do it big, man.
Yeah, we got to. We got to do it big, brother Hassan.
Yeah, my brother.
We got to do it big. How you shaping up for June 25th?
Absolutely, brother. I'm going to do my best, brother. We got African Liberation Day coming up before then, though, May 21st.
What is it, African Liberation?
Yes, sir, African Liberation Day. If you're from D.C., if you've been in D.C. most of your life, and you're 40-something years old, you remember when African Liberation Day was off the hook. I mean, it was massive. The whole Malcolm X Park used to be covered with people. Liberation Day. Now, if you're lucky, you can get 100 people, if you're lucky.
Why you think that is?
It's sad, brother. I tell you why, because there became a strategic disconnect between the older generation who knew about Marcus Garvey, black nationalism, and the youth who are not really taught that in school. They're just not taught that in school. They got to see
That's
the red.
True.
If they don't see the red, black, and green every day, if they don't see Marcus Garvey every day, you got some murals in certain parts of the city. Now you're Helen Burroughs. You got a big mural right next to the Burger King, the Wendy's, and so you got to look around for it. But they're not taught that in school. They're not. And black
right,
people keep
right.
black people keep thinking that they're gonna have. I mean, they're gonna have something like Marcus Garvey in U.S. textbooks. They don't. They don't.
That's true. That's true. That's really true. That's an excellent point. That for all real purposes, the knowledge of our history is not taught in the public education system at all.
Man, if you ask the average say 13-year-old who Marcus Garvey was, it's sad. They will not be able to tell you who Marcus Garvey was. The vast majority of them will not be able to say in one statement who Marcus Messiah Garvey was. Problem, man. That's a sad thing. I mean, it's sad, man. So now we're in D.C. We're going to be working with Uhuru, Black Is Back, and other organizations and concerned brothers and sisters. We're going to get the Marcus Garvey Saturday School going here in D.C. Over
That's
on Barry where we set out for the march on the Day of Action.
Yes, sir. Well, let me ask you this, Brother Hassan. How can the people get in contact with you and help you in D.C. and in Maryland and surrounding areas? How can they contact you?
Well, they can contact me simply by writing my phone number down, 202-674-4089. That's 202-674-4089, my beautiful black family. Call me. I'm also at your service. If you need me, hey, call me. You gotta call me. You can go on my Gmail, newblackpantherparty.dc@gmail.com. That's newblackpantherparty.dc@gmail.com. My beautiful Nubian kings and queens.
That's what's up, my brother. We appreciate you, Brother Hassan. Keep pushing. Keep pushing strong, brother. We gonna make it even harder and bolder on June the 25th. And I already know, because I've seen what you all did on the 23rd. I know D.C. going to stand up strong.
Absolutely, brother. Absolutely.
Yes, sir. Black power, brother, son.
Oh, yeah. Black power. Call me, brothers and sisters. Call me. Shoot me.
That's Brother Hassan. That's Brother Hassan, D.C. in the house. For those of you who are in D.C. and surrounding areas, link up with our Brother Hassan. Let's take the next caller, 404-539, you're on the air, Black Power Radio. It's the dawn of black nationalism, Black Power. 404, go right ahead. All right, they just listening in. 504-235, you're on the air, Black Power Radio. It's the dawn of black nationalism, Black Power.
Black Power, Black Power, brother.
Hey,
brother,
what's going
can
on?
Can you hear me, brother?
Yes,
sir. Black man. This is Reverend Raymond Brown, brother. And first
hey,
of all,
brother Brown, what's going on, brother?
First of all, brother, thank you for the historical analysis. I can go on and on. Chronological knowledge that you displayed on this air, brother. It sounds like I was in college just for a minute there. But I want to say all
black
praise
college,
to All praise due to the Most High God. And also,
yes, sir.
I want to acknowledge my national chairman. I call him Dr. Malik Zulu Shabazz.
Yes, sir.
And I want to acknowledge yes, him today. And all my sisters. And I really want to acknowledge Sister Khadija Shakur. That's a bad
right.
sister there.
Yes,
and I
sir.
Appreciate her for the leadership that she has shown. And basically, what I want to say, brother, that on the 23rd April, we led a march here in the city of New Orleans against the demolition of public housing. Now, that said, these public housing, which is the Abbeville Housing Project, is not considered the raggedy, ghetto-type, rundown housing developments. This development is strong, clean, and they have intelligent black folks living in these developments. So don't get in your mind that we was fighting against the demolition of something raggedy, toned down, sort of like Cabrini Green. This is state of the art development here that they're trying to tear down. So we marched against the demolition of public housing in that area because there was at least five or six sisters who was homeless in that area. They were looking for somewhere to stay. And there were several apartments available, brother. But guess what? It was the United States government, HUD, that prevented them from getting a home for them and their children. So what I'm saying, I want brothers and sisters listening to understand. We're not talking about an area that looked poverty-stricken. We're talking about an area where the grass is cut neat, the trash is picked up, you have the elderly, and you have the young and the elderly living side by side in harmony. They haven't had a murder in that area, brother, in the last year or two. Okay? So what I'm saying is this, is that on the day of action, we dealt with several issues, the housing issue, the incarceration issue, a lot of brothers and sisters. We dealt with the economic development side, because there's a lot of contracts out there, and brothers and sisters, we ain't benefiting from those contracts. I mean, millions of dollars.
Right.
If you get fair, look, we black nationalists, but we still pay taxes. We still buy into this system. So basically, those grants and contracts was made for us. When you hear the word grants, contracts, and stuff like that, many of the black men say, well, we don't need that. Let's just be on our own. Well, go get that money. It's for you anyway. You understand? It was the slaves that was put in slavery, particularly down south. You know about the cotton grain. We're put in slavery. We built this nation. The money that they have is our money, really. Okay, they owe us reparations. So basically, if you go apply for a grant or for a contract, you're not sucking into the system, okay? But you use that money for what? For liberation. You use that money for what? To build schools. It takes capital to build schools. I'm not a capitalist in no way, in no term. But I do believe that blacks need their own schools, need their own businesses. Huh? If you look at the black community, I don't want to keep you long, black man, because I can keep going. If you look black community, the majority of the business in the black community is either owned and controlled by the white man, by the Jews, and by the Arabs. The Arabs have took all the stores in the black community in New Orleans. And the Vietnamese have took all the corner stores and left us with what? With nothing. Because you know why? Because our so-called black leadership, these punk Uncle Tom who have walked around our neighborhood and shook our hand and say, if you vote for me, I'm going to give you liberation. Huh? And we believe them, brother. We believe what they say, right? We went to the polls and drove in thousands, and we voted for them. But what do we get? Huh? We get poverty. We get police brutality. We get imprisonment. Huh? They owe us. I mean, it's an ongoing cycle of violence against the black man and the black woman and the black child. You understand? And some of it is a violence. It's violence against the black family. And lastly, black man, when I say this here, I want you to hear me good. Just recently, a white judge in Slidell, Louisiana, about 20, 30 miles from New Orleans, sentenced a brother to life in prison for selling marijuana. Mm. Let me
Slidell, Louisiana,
30 miles from New Orleans. Check it out. This brother was convicted three times for marijuana. On probation, got busted again with two bags of marijuana and four convictions, right? So they used the habitual offender's law, the street strike we call it. And they railroaded this black man. He's only 25 years old. And the judge sentenced him Friday to life in prison for marijuana. I want all y'all to listen to me today. This brother is going to Angola State Penitentiary for marijuana. You hear me? Can you imagine? Talking about he going to win on the appeal. I don't want to discuss the appeal. I want to say it was wrong what the judge did, and we know nothing. Listen, we had no knowledge this was going on. There's so many brothers and sisters going to court. I tell you, we're dealing with multiple brothers and sisters going to court, you understand, facing hard times. But this one was unique because for two bags of weed, come on now, you will spend the rest of your life on a plantation, picking cows, you understand, picking peas, cleaning cows, you know, working horses the rest of your life for weed. Now, why? Same belongs to the brother. So I want to say the brother's name is Brother Kenil. It's spelled C-O-R-N-E-L-L. Brother Kenil Hood, H-O-O-D, the second. Okay? Wow. Any brother or sister want more information about this brother can call me at 504-235-5472. I'm on Facebook under Civil Rights. On Facebook, go to Facebook.com and put in Civil Rights. I'm Reverend Raymond Brown. I'm your comrade. We're going to fight this struggle. We're not going to give up. We're going to move our people forward. It's time for revolution. It's time for unity. You understand what I'm saying? Time for the call all arguing and bickering. And I'm going to say this here, brother. I really feel bad how there's a brother going around attacking Brother Shamir. He's attacking
who?
Brother King Shamir. He's attacking his brother on the internet, right? I'm asking this brother, and I read it on the internet, how he attacked Brother King Shamir. He called himself Gold Something. But, brother, if you're listening, please stop attacking your brother. Please stop calling him out his name. Huh? He got enough of burden and load on his shoulder to fight against this racist system. You understand? Please, brothers and sisters, stop trying to compete in knowledge. Stop trying to compete in these types of things. Let's just unite together and embrace each other. All this bickering and fighting among black nationalists, let's stop. I believe the chairman said it, you know, in his writings that we should not be going around doing these kind of things.
That's right. No, that's actual fact.
You understand?
Like I said before we even got into it, Africa is under attack. And while Africa is under attack, we find a little petty ways to nitpick with each other.
Exactly.
That's got to stop.
You know, in closing, brother, I love you. I love my brothers and sisters. But please do one thing for me. You understand? Don't. When you see a brother clamming up and he's getting a little name recognition, don't attack him. Don't attack him. Just show him some love. You know, Brother Shamir has come a long way. He's on the national scene now. Let's embrace him and love him. You know, and let's let him know, you know, go on, brother. Keep fighting. And also, his rap music is good, too. I want to mention that. I was listening to some of the, you know, I'm not for the rap stuff, you know, some of the bad rap stuff. But I got to say that Brother Shamir stuff is good, it's clean, and but I'm not for some of the rap stuff that's out there. You know, the gangbanging and the hating themselves, I'm not for that. But I want to recommend that brothers and sisters listen to the national chairman, Malik. Listen to him. You know, he's a good brother, and Brother Malik, if you're listening, anybody can, you know, let him know I love him, and I'm going to be on the day of action, what that is, on June the what?
June 25th.
June 25th, I will organize something here in New Orleans, and brother, I love you. Thank you for your time. You
love
know,
you
Black
too,
Power,
sir.
Black Power, brother, y'all go on with the struggle, okay?
All right, Black Power. Like right. Listen, y'all just don't know. That brother right there, that brother right there has been in the struggle for a long time and is still rolling. So, as youngsters, you ain't got no excuse. I ain't got no excuse. Black man inspired me. We appreciate you, Reverend Brown. And like I said, I know the national chairman listening. He heard that. Nothing but love for you. Let me take another call here. 508-509, you're on the air, Black Power Radio. We're talking about the dawn of black nationalism, black power.
508, your mic's open. All right. 773-673 on the air, Black Power Radio. It's the dawn of black nationalism. What you going to do in this hour, Black Power? 773, your mic is open. I guess you all are just listening. So listen, that's some important points that was just raised here. That was some important points that was just raised. And I don't want to just glaze over what neither of the brothers said, but in particular what Brother Hassan said on the school system. On the school system. Let me just be for real. We don't really call it the school system. We don't even really call it the public education system. We call it the killing fields. Unfortunately, you know, since the black nation has not yet produced our own schools in mass, we right now have to send our children, or we're willingly sending our children to these killing fields. Okay? And so this again goes into the dawn of black nationalism, because look, the effects are obvious. The effects are obvious. It's unfortunate. You go to 10 of our youngsters. I'm talking youngsters. You go to 10 of the youngsters and ask them, do you know about Marcus Garvey? Do you know about Martin Delaney? Do you know about the Honorable Elijah Muhammad? I mean, just throw something out there. Do you know about Queen Mother Moore? Do you know about Queen Nzinga? Do you know? Just ask them something. Do you know? And I guarantee you, almost all 10 of them will say, no, I don't know. Maybe. I think I heard of that. Okay? When back in the day, when you had your own school, black man and black woman, when you had your own school system in the little red barn, or in somebody's house, or something that was ours, and we was teaching our own, things like this was mandatory reading, mandatory study. J.A. Rogers and 100 Facts of the Negro and all of that, mandatory. You couldn't even consider yourself a black man. You couldn't even consider yourself a proud African. And you don't know your own history. But I'm telling you again that, see, J. Edgar Hoover, in initiating the counterintelligence program of the United States government with the help of the FBI and those agencies, their aim was to take you all the way away from your history and all the way away from your culture, and all the way away from nationhood. See, we've gotten spooky as a nation, family. We're doing the slave thing. We're doing the, you know, what the slave master told us to do, just pray and just meditate, and one day everything will be okay. You know, you just pick this cotton, you know, you pick this tobacco, and do all the labor for me, and then God is going to bless you in the sky. And all the meanwhile, they are building, they were and are building up an infrastructure for their children. Ford Motor Company. Huh? Ford Motor Company and Chevy and all those industrial companies that came up, they came up off of the backs of black people. So do you think that the presidents of these companies, I'm talking about even today, I'm not just talking about black in the day, I'm talking about right now, do you think that the presidents of these companies are in office to give you and me and I and my babies and your babies and our family a seat in their company? Do you think that? I told you before that the dollar was falling. The dollar has crashed. Let me stop saying it's falling. The dollar has crashed. So everything that they have, that they're holding on to it, because now that's natural. That's the first law of this universe. Self-preservation. Well, in nature, self-preservation. So they hold on to what they have. And so they're not interested in the black nation. And the only people who are black that they'll deal with is those that help support the white power structure. See? That's why I always encourage people to read Frantz Fanon and The Wretched of the Earth. Okay? Get into some psychology, some African psychology. Get into black skin, white mask. Get into that. If you're a true black nationalist, if you want some true black nationalism, you're going to have to understand the psychology of our people, the psychology of oppression. Study you the Stockholm Syndrome. Some of you are like, what the hell is that? Study Stockholm Syndrome. It is where a group of people or a person who is in captivity, they're in captivity for so long that they no longer want to become free. They no longer want to be relieved from the oppression, but that they now begin to feel sorry for their enslaver. They begin to feel sorry for the person that captured them and locked them down. I watch some of us, especially in some of these organizations. We are so quick to apologize for white folks and what they have done to black people. We're so quick to comfort white folks and put our arms around the white man and white woman, and so quick to say, you didn't have anything to do with it. It's not your fault. You know, you're just an apologist for white folks. But when you look at the white folks' history, when they have went to battle against even other white nations, they didn't apologize, and they don't apologize for what they had to do for their particular nation. See, a real apology is reparations. A real fix of the situation is to repair the damage. If we are on a boat and the boat has a hole in it, let's just make it plain. If we're on a boat and some white folks cause and put a hole in the boat and the boat begins to sink, them just saying, I apologize, is not going to stop the boat from sinking. Minister Malcolm said like this. He said, if you stab me in the back and the knife blade goes down 7 inches and you pull it out 1 inch or 2 inches, that's not progress. The knife is still in your back, black man and black woman. And so this is the condition that we're in 2011. The knife may have been pulled out 1 inch. You can drink out the water fountain, or 2 inches. You can go to the toilet or go to the movies, or maybe even 3 inches. You can sit on the bus now. But damn it, we don't have a nation of our own. And we are still subjugated to the policies and the dictates of the European colony and the white imperialist and the white power structure. And even the Uncle Toms and Negroes, who the white man and white folks have put up before us as our so-called leaders. See, that's why I'm drawing your mind now. I'm drawing you to study Haiti and how they were liberated from colonialism. They were liberated from being ruled by a small few. They came together as a nation. See, the powers that organize in America to control the black nation, they're not a large majority of powers. It's just a few handful of families. Y'all hear what I'm saying? It's a few handful of families. You know, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and all them. Just a few small families that organize and control what happens in the black community. Okay? That's why they work so hard to keep us divided and disunited. Now, on to what Reverend Brown said about those who got an issue or whatnot with Minister King Samir. I say we got to grow the hell up, man. Grow the hell up, black man and black woman, who's acting like that. You're acting like babies. Acting like sissies in a time of war. And then we, as Panthers, can't be found putting ourselves in position, if we're doing that, to cause people to have an issue. We got to be just and civilized in all of our dealings. We got to grow the hell up. Anybody right now who is nitpicking with each other while Africa's under attack and while your black behind is under attack in the hills of North America, you deserve whatever you get from this cracker. How in the hell we going to have bullets flying and everything happening, police brutality in our community in disarray, and all you can focus on is he said, she said, or some petty stuff that's not going to get us free in the end? See, that's why you got to stay focused on June 25th. Anybody that has time to be petty in this hour, nitpicking this hour, is because you ain't working hard enough. You ain't slaving over this, for lack of a better term. You ain't laboring over this. I even wonder if you're serious about black liberation. The white power structure has made its aims and objectives clear. They have already told you and me that they will not let us go just casually. They've already told us. They've shown us in their actions. They ain't talking about it. Reverend Brown told you they just gave a young man life in prison for weed, for marijuana. Yeah, your parents had weed, didn't they? Many of your parents had weed, and some of you listening got weed right now. You might be smoking right now while you're listening. You might be. I'm not saying you should. You might be. Can you imagine going and spending the rest of your life in jail for a bag of weed? But see, that's what the system, that's the way the system is set up. Any way that we can trap a black man up, any way we can trap a black woman up, we throw them in jail. We throw them in the penitentiary. Because just like I was saying about the Federal Reserve, that it's not a government-run institution, neither is the penitentiaries. The penitentiaries of America are privately owned. Anybody with enough money can get together, get you a building, and build you a penitentiary. And so that's a business investment. That means they have stock. They have reason to keep warehousing people. There is no mistake that we are so few as a population in America, but so large of the prison population. That is no mistake at all. See, that, all of that goes right black to capitalism and right back to J. Edgar Hoover and COINTELPRO. All that stuff is interconnected. So that's why when you all call me and, you know, we talk on the phone or your email or whatever, whatever, I don't have damn time to talk about no snookie. I have no time to talk about Jersey Shore and talk about the damn BET Awards. None of that. I don't care about that. The black nation is under attack. And let me say that. Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz don't care about that. The new Black Panther Party don't care about that. We don't give a damn about the reality of these white folks. Because at the end of the day, they still going to have theirs. They still going to do for their children and their babies. And they, you know what I'm saying? And they're going to do that. I'm talking about those in power because there's even The white folks that they have left out, they don't give a damn about. They don't even take care of all of their own, so you know they're not taking care of you. They're going to do what they have to do. And as I'm telling you, we just don't have another generation or two just to sacrifice. They killed us with crack cocaine. They killed us with crack cocaine. You're witnessing right now a generation of crack grandmothers now. The 80s hit. They flooded the ghettos with crack cocaine in order to stop that black power movement, see? What do you think it was? You get men like Huey P. Newton hooked on drugs and others, strong ones hooked on drugs. You get the young youth hooked on drugs, doped up and cracked out and alcoholed out. How they going to plan a revolution? How you going to overthrow the oppression? How you going to do it? See, it's the same thing they did to the indigenous people, the so-called Indian, the red man and red woman. That's family, too, when you know the history. Had to have a warrior woman come on and tell you about it. They did the indigenous people like that on this soil, the red man and red woman. Got them high on drugs, on the pipe and all of that. Got them high and took the land, put smallpox in their blanket and took the land. There's a liquor store on every damn corner in the black community almost. Any black community you go to in the world, and I travel a lot, you'll see a liquor store on one corner, you'll see a church on the other corner. A liquor store on one side of the corner and a church on the other corner. And a sprinkle of a mosque or an organization there. That's what you see in the black community. Why? Because as I was reading to you in the beginning, see, the church has been infiltrated. That's why I love me some brothers like Reverend Brown and the strong preachers and the strong imam, because the mosque ain't out of it either. And these black nationalist organizations are not out of it. We all have been infiltrated by this deception. And you have people that are inserted into these organizations, inserted into the churches, inserted into the mosques, inserted to stir up strife and inserted. See, think about COINTELPRO. Inserted to steer the people away from the program. You wonder why people come to these programs and they're so fired up, then all of a sudden they run into a person, their spirit is gone. It's because these people are inserted into these organizations and inserted into these religious houses. And it's our fault, those of us who really care about the scenario and care about the situation, it's our fault for not being strong enough to kick their asses out of here. Pardon my language. It's our fault that we are not strong enough to move on the issues of our community. Hey, you don't like somebody selling dope in the community, what have you, then they'll roll on their ass in self-defense. I mean, educate them. If you can educate them, but I'm saying remove them. What the hell? Remove them. There should be enough strong brothers and even sisters in the community that care enough to make a difference. But the problem is we get so conscious. You get so daggone conscious, you lose your military fighting ability. And you just think you're going to fly away and it's going to solve the problem. See, that's why the Black Power General, in whose spirit we come in, I got to say that to you, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. That's why he told you that revolution was the only solution, see? It's the only thing that's going to fix it. It's the only thing that's going to allow you to establish a nation of your own, because Minister Malcolm told you that's what helped other people do it. Anybody that has their own nation right now is because they came together as a people and fought against those who was putting them in a subjugated position. See, but Minister Malcolm goes on, I'll play it before we go off, but Minister Malcolm goes on to tell you that the Negro Revolution, you're afraid to bleed, you know what I mean? We've become afraid to make certain sacrifices. And then to make it more crazy, since we have fluoride in our water, since we have chemicals and different processes in our foods, they mess with our neurology, they mess with our minds, they mess with your spirit and your chi, it messes with your power, black man. I'm encouraging everybody listening to go back to a holistic way of life. Do you understand right now that the FDA in certain cities right now is confiscating vitamins and confiscating minerals? Do you know that? They are confiscating vitamin C. They're going to confiscate echinacea. They're going to confiscate the iron pills. They're going to take it. They're going to take the holistic herbs. They're going to take it because, wow. I'm just telling you, look it up. I'm not even going to, just look it up for yourself. Type in FDA confiscates vitamin C. It'll pull right up. All right, so now, you know what the opposition is going to do. This is the point I'm making to you, because as we're talking about Haiti, and as we're talking about the black nationalists of the past, they're using the same tactics against us in 2011. See, that's why our ancients told us there's nothing new under the sun. Everything that's happening right now is just a repeat of a cycle and a repeat of a process, because it has not been enacted upon by an external superior phenomenon. See what I'm saying? It has not been enacted upon by an external superior phenomenon. My sister Zaida just tell me now, in North Carolina, they couldn't even grow fruit in their own gardens in the backyard. See what I'm saying? I'm trying to show you all something. Thank you for that, sister. Can't even grow your own community gardens. The New Black Panther Party, many of us got community gardens. They're moving on your right to exist in America. Gas is, in many areas, over $4 a gallon. It's going to climb by the summer. Mark my words. And they just said in the news that the price of oil had dropped. It had declined. So why is gas so high? You got to start not only asking these questions, but being able to manifest some answers here. The Honorable Comrade Huey P. Newton would say that power is the ability to define phenomena and make it act in a desired manner. Make it act in a desired manner. We have defined the phenomenon that has oppressed us and kept us in the conditions, but we had not mastered how to make it or make them act in a desired manner. See, that's what we got to talk about. Because what happened is, let me talk to you on April 23rd. April 23rd, they tried to make us act in their desired manner. Many of you, when you went to organize, you were met by the police force. Tell me I'm lying. Many of you, even though you had went through all the procedures and got all the permits and did what you had to do, many of you were still met by the police, even though you assembled in a legal fashion. Because the police force is an extended arm. It's an extended branch of the state. And when they say that they're there to serve and protect, they are not talking about you, black man and black woman. There are some well-meaning black men and women who have joined the force just for financial reasons, okay? But hell, that does not stop the establishment and what the purpose is. The purpose is not to serve and protect the black community. If that was the point, then we wouldn't have to have a police patrol. You wouldn't have to have community review boards. Their purpose is to read their manual. Their purpose is to protect property and to protect the establishment. So they're moving on your rights right now. I don't care what you believe in. They're moving on all of our rights. Our rights that were given to us by the divine black God. Moving on it. And so as we try to organize, and we did organize for April the 23rd, you were met by a police force in most cities. Dr. and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz was no different. He's going through the airports. He's met by about 20 or so TSA agents. I get into Chicago, Illinois. And the organizers are there in Chicago, Illinois, and met by police force with instructions that if any of you organize, this is what they said that I organize, if any of you organize, even though it's lawful and even though it's peaceful, we will arrest you. And I'm just going to say this. I got pictures of what we did. We got pictures. We organized in Chicago, Illinois. In other areas, you organize, okay, because you defined phenomena and made it act in a desired manner against the oppression of your captors or against the extended arm of the state. And so all I'm saying, that is to say this, that this is not going to be an easy road. It doesn't matter what you believe. Everybody who has come as our leaders and our teachers and our guides, they have all told you and me that this would not be an easy road, that we would have to go through some things. We would have to get some bumps and some bruises and be arrested, and even at times some of us would even lose our life in this. But I want you, in these last remaining minutes that we have here, I want you to think on this. What is more valuable to you? Is it more valuable that you drive a nice car, that you have a nice suit or a nice dress? Is it more valuable to you that you have a nice home, that you have a nice TV screen and computer? Is all of that worth your freedom? It's all of that worth your baby's freedom, your children's freedom, your nephew's freedom, your cousin's freedom, your mother, your father, your uncle, your auntie, hell, even the dog if you got one. Is it worth the freedom? Because while you sit up and sit lofty right now, there is a satanic force that is moving in the world and has been moving in the world for some decades that is not being checked by those of us who say we got the strength. Now, they did it in Haiti. They did it in other areas. I want you all who are listening to study the Bang Dung Conference. I think it was in 59. Mike can correct me if I'm wrong. But the Bang Dung Conference was where all of the indigenous people came together. They came together, but they did not include any white folks. Talking about the indigenous black man, the indigenous brown man, the indigenous red man, even the indigenous yellow man, anybody who had any sense and any kind of melanin, they came together. But they did not include any white folks. And what they agreed on in the Bang Dung Conference, this is in the 50s, they agreed that they had one common cause. One common cause. And they had one common enemy. They had one common cause and they had one common enemy. If you read our program, we tell you that the same rabid dog that bites us bites you too. Okay? One common cause, one common enemy. We as a people are in one common situation. And I just want to be clear that this whole Uncle Tom thing, it's not a new thing. They've always had some, what I call chicken and a biscuit nigga. They've always had some chicken and a biscuit nigga to tell what's going on with the activists and the revolutionaries and the warriors and sister soldiers on the in any situation, plantation, whatever, slave ship, whatever. It's always been there as long as there's been that capitalist dynamic. It's always been there. As long as there's been an opportunity for one particular member of our nation or a group of people from our nation to benefit financially over the rest of us, then they sell us out. See? They sell us out. So that's why what I'm telling you now is you're not going to have that excuse, even to the Uncle Tom's listening, because I know you all listen. You email me all the time. The dollar has crashed. And if you're waiting for it to pop up on CNN, they've really said it in so many words. They have literally put it in their news clippings. You can type it in on YouTube. I mean, it's all over with that. And so in this hour, with the decline of the dollar now, if you sell out our interest in this hour and our rise as a people in this hour, then the angels, and I ain't talking about no pale-faced, blue-eyed white folks with wings. I'm talking about some real, live, black, indigenous human beings on this planet. I call them angels. They gonna have your head. We gotta go for freedom, brothers and sisters, and we're going for freedom, and we will have it. Make no mistake about it. But what we are inviting you to with this June 25th is to participate in your own liberation. To take what you have learned of yourself, no matter if it's just a fingernail's full of what you have learned of yourself, and take it from the textbook and put it into your life and apply it into your life. We're asking you now to begin to manifest your divine qualities and your divine characteristics and who you are. Okay? Begin to manifest. Shaw Kwali has to manifest. And it's not good enough just to say we got to have some land. We got to have this. We got to have that. We got to stop this. We got to, and not do nothing. It's not good enough. Now there has to be some tangle now. It got to be some confrontation, some righteous confrontation. You know the preachers would always say that God would end up tangling with the devil. Right? The good would always tangle with evil. The truth would tangle with falsehood. Well, this is that hour. You gotta be willing to confrontate. I mean, even on your jobs, you got to be willing to think about what you're gonna do if they lay you off. Some of you can bear witness. Some of you have been on your job 10 years. You've been on your job 15 years. You've been on your job 20 years, and you come in faithfully all the time. And then one day you get called into the office, and that supervisor tells you that your services are no longer needed. This is going on all over America. They tell you that your services are no longer needed. They tell you that they're downsizing. That's what they tell you. That's the language they use. They're downsizing. And many of you who have been searching for work, you can't find it. And so I'm saying all of this to say now that you have to, and we have to now begin to pool our resources and to do for ourselves. Brothers and sisters, we are laying the groundwork for a nation of our own, irregardless to land, label, or language, for black people and indigenous people. Email us your questions, your comments, how you can get involved with the ministries at nationaldayofaction@yahoo.com. Or you can just text direct, text only, to 502-299-8530. We're going to build a nation. We're going to have to pick up the rest of that subject. But you all study that. Study black nationalism. Study Pan-Africanism. Study Martin Delaney, Marcus Garvey, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Study Prophet Noble Drew Ali. Study those who have come to talking about black nationalism. And also study the opposite. Study J. Edgar Hoover, COINTELPRO. Study the Patriot Act, Homeland Security. Study why they don't want you to unite as a nation. And we will reconvene again. Dear brothers and sisters, I do want to say that we will be having a conference call. We're going to have a conference call for all of the organizers. Check with my Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/SeanKwali. That's with a C, C-H-A-W-N-K-W-E-L-I. I'm going to give the information out there. We're going to do a conference call tonight for all the organizers and all those who want to organize. We're getting busy. See you all off the line, off the air, in the field. Love you all of my family. Black power for black people. The call is freedom or death. And ain't no peace till black people got peace. Black power.